Good afternoon, everyone. It's noon Eastern time, and so we're going to go ahead and kick off this webinar. On behalf of the Snowfighters Institute, I want to thank you all for being here, and I want to thank our special guest, Levi Jett. My name is Phil Harwood. Feel free to unmute yourself if you want to jump into the conversation along the way. Just stop us and ask a question, or feel free to type a question or a comment into the chat as well. If you're bold enough to turn on your camera, we'd love to see your faces. We are recording, though, so I'll leave that up to you. And again, we just appreciate all you being here. And we want to start out just by kind of introducing ourselves. You know, some of you we know each other, but others not so much yet. So Levi, I'm going to let you kind of kick it off.
Sure. Thanks, Phil. So my name is Levi Jett. I am the owner and CEO of Jett Facility Consultants. So what we do is we help to get rid of the operational issues that a lot of snow companies face. We work to help create and refine processes, and we do that through on-site consultations. And then today we'll be talking about this mock storm thing. And that is kind of a product that I developed myself. And it's just sort of a training tool that we do share with companies. Before the snow industry, I'll be honest, before I started in this industry, I had no idea it existed. But I did serve almost 9 years in the Army. Deployed to Afghanistan from 2009 through 2010. I was a military police officer in the Army, and then got my start at Case Snow Management. I took a job as a seasonal field supervisor, which, you know, I'm not going to get too much into my personal story, my personal journey, but at the time, I really had no business taking a job like that. I needed full-time work, but the ad kind of spoke to me. And so I took that as a sign and went with it. Really learned a lot in that first year, really, you know, busted my hump and, you know, proved that I belonged, and got a full-time offer, and continued to work and, you know, take promotions and grow within that organization. And then once I left Case, I had made it to a regional director of operations. And, you know, shortly after that, started my own company. So, again, you know, we exist to help the snow companies out. And, you know, we're able to look at it through multiple different angles.
So where did this idea of this mock storm training come into place? Was this something you had done previously with another company, or where did this idea come from?
So kind of twofold. So when I was at Case, I had made it to a senior account manager. At this point, I had quite a few, you know, field people working for me, but I also had account managers, people in the sourcing area working for me as well. And I was, you know, kind of sitting out on my porch one evening, and, you know, we were chugging along in landscape season. Everything was going really well. And it just kind of hit me like a wave, where it was like, oh no, like snow is coming, winter is coming. And what I had done to build my team was, I always want to hire for attitude and fit for a team. I don't necessarily care about as much experience. And with doing that, I had hired a lot of people, that did not have snow experience. And so, you know, I started realizing what a problem this was actually going to be, because, you know, how do you get someone ready, you know, to work in snowstorms, not as much necessarily plowing snow, but, you know, as far as, you know, what's that client interaction look like? What's the, you know, preparation, what's it look like when you're actually in a storm? And, you know, I started kind of freaking out, to be honest, you know, trying to figure out what I was going to do to get my team ready to go. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to kind of recall on my military experience a little bit. When I was in the Army, you know, training is everything that you do. You train all day, every day. But sometimes the training is like really awesome and, you know, really professional. And we have, you know, ranges and facilities that we go to train. And other times, because if you're on a base with 10, 20, 30,000 other soldiers, it's not necessarily always your turn to use those facilities. So sometimes we have to get kind of creative, with, you know, how we go about training. And so I started to reflect and think back on when we would do what we called MOUT training, which is military operations in urban terrain. And to put that in layman's terms, if you think of any movie or show that you watch where it's, you know, cops or SWAT teams or something like that, where, you know, the good guys kind of break into a house and start, you know, methodically moving through it, looking for the bad guys. That's essentially what that is. And again, you know, we had facilities that were awesome for this, but, you know, those weren't always available to us. So we would get creative and we would create like two-dimensional, you know, floor plans using sticks, you know, using our boots to carve out lines in the dirt to make these floor plans. And, you know, we would practice maneuvering through these floor plans and these pretend buildings. And it was really, you know, pretend training. And at the time you really felt stupid doing it because, you know, you could see, you know, it was a two-dimensional house. You could see right through it. But the main difficulty in getting a team together for this wasn't necessarily, you know, maneuvering around walls. It was getting your timing down, operating as a group. It was a lot of the nuances that you needed to practice. And so by doing this type of training almost daily, we would notice, you know, big differences between usually we do a training in a facility about once a month. So kind of in between that time, you would realize a lot of, you know, positive gains for when we go back to a facility the next time. And so kind of thinking in terms of that, I was like, okay, you know, maybe I can try to make a like pretend storm to put these guys through. And so that's kind of how it started. I took a screenshot of a map of all of our sites and took that to Windows Paint and started mocking up, you know, some like, you know, very, very elementary, you know, weather maps, to have my team kind of look at. And then from there, you know, started thinking of different scenarios, you know, like what has happened to me over the past handful of years that, you know, is likely to reappear, and, you know, kind of writing that down and, you know, passing these notes. So the first time we ever did one, we just kind of did it throughout the course of a week, exchanging emails back and forth. So we had a couple of, you know, meetings throughout the week to really talk about this, but a lot of it was, you know, because we couldn't take a time out from our normal landscape duties, you know, so we had to get kind of creative with how we were going to do it. But we would just kind of sort of send emails back and forth. You know, I would send, you know, hey, here's the updated weather forecast. You know, here are some different scenarios. Like, here's what's changed. And I need you guys to, you know, build solutions to this. And so credit to my team, you know, they would work late. A lot of these meetings happened probably after 7 or 8 at night, where they would jump on a Teams call and, you know, start working through this and figuring out what they were going to do. And then they would send me an email back. And that's how we would kind of go throughout the course of a week. And, you know, I had a lot of people tell me that and thank me for doing this, because what ended up happening was as we did these, I think we did probably about 3 in the span of July until, you know, November-ish. But they were able to kind of use what we talked about, what we discussed, the strategies that were used as a playbook moving forward. And so when we were actually in snow events, they could kind of go back and reference some of the things that we talked about, some of the decisions that we made, and to be able to use those and to know that those decisions are, you know, good decisions because we've talked about them ad nauseum, you know. So that's kind of where it came from.
Yeah, that's really great. There's a million things running through my head right now. But first of all, I'm super glad we're doing this, and thank you for being here. This is actually a nice little preview of what we're going to be doing in a lot more depth at our ops management event next month. So if anyone hasn't doesn't have that on their radar screen, you definitely want to check that out. Snow Fighters Institute has an operations management event September 11th and 12th, where we're going to be doing a full mock storm event. And so what we're doing today is a preview of that. And I love the military, you know, genesis of this. And I, you know, being, this is almost my 40th year in the industry. You know, a lot of that's been as a consultant. I've worked with hundreds of different companies across the industry. And I'm all for, you know, flat organizations and, you know, distributed decision making. But when it comes to operations, operations is really a military endeavor. It should be. The best operational structures in our industry are very just command and control, very black and white, very top down. And I know that doesn't feel good for everyone to have that structure in place, but that really is what works best. So I think that military model is really optimal. And, you know, we titled this webinar Ready for Battle. And in my experience, most of the time, snow contractors are not ready for battle. They're just running out and doing the best they can do. And, you know, I don't know. I love snow. I love everything about the industry, but I can guarantee you, you know, especially those early storms, we're not ready for battle. We're figuring it out. And we never had these tools. It never occurred to me to do mock storm training. I totally would have done it. It would have been a game changer. So I'm really excited to hear about just some of the different components of this. Like, what is it and how do you do it and who's involved and when do you do it? Do you start doing it in July or August, or is it better to do it in September, October? How long does it take? Is this a hour you're pulling everyone out of the field? Is this operators or is this management? Like, I have a million questions.
You can't ask me all 100 questions at the same time.
I know. So I'm going to shut up. I'm going to turn it back over to you, and I'm going to let you guide us through it. But I'll interject if I have questions. And
yeah,
certainly if anyone else has questions, get them in the chat or just unmute yourself and go for it.
Yeah. Okay. So I think one of the first things that you know, we need to ask ourselves is your team in a winning position for this next winter? Because, you know, kind of like what Phil said, there's a lot of, you know, fly by the seat of your pants type of things when it comes into snow. You know, when I had a guy on my team when we first started doing this stuff where, you know, he was adamantly opposed.
Oh, I lost you, Levi.
You got me now?
There you go.
Okay, sorry. But yeah, so I had a guy that was just adamantly opposed to this type of training. And his thought process and his vision, there was no real way to get prepared for snow. As he always said, it was always kind of a blank show. And you just do the best you can and get through it. And which I understand that, you know, there are components of this where, you know, it is a little bit kind of up in the air sometimes. But I also think that there are, you know, tons of things that happen in the course of a storm, or really the leading up the pre-storm period, that you really can work through and develop your strategies and, you know, your mindsets that, you know, everyone is going to use. I've often said that, you know, it's much easier for us to sit right now, in the middle of August, and discuss, you know, how we're going to handle things and how we're going to manage things and what decisions are we likely to make for an event now, because there is no pressure. All the pressure is off. It's not snowing outside. No one is, you know, counting on us to be somewhere in, you know, a couple hours or the next day or whatever. So, I think, you know, having these conversations, you know, going through exercises like this, especially in the off season, is so valuable, to companies to have the opportunities to talk through these things, because what you find is as you're moving through this, you know, you're going to have, you know, people ask questions. Why do we do it this way? You know, and sometimes that's a training moment for you to further explain your process. But sometimes, you know, you might have to be like, why do I do it this way? You know, and being able to have thoughts like that and spend some time actually thinking about that, again, it is a good thing in the middle of summer or even early fall. So there are different types of mock events, the scenario-based training stuff that I think that you could do. So I'd really kind of categorize them into three different categories. So one is going to be what I'd call like a dress rehearsal. So this would be an event where, you know, we're in November or December, you know, and we've got a storm coming in, and maybe we're, you know, 48 hours out, 72 hours out from when we expect this storm to happen. This would be a good time to take maybe an hour and sit with your full operations team and to kind of go through, you know, and just throw up some light scenarios to them, you know, using the real forecasts that you guys are preparing for. And again, just trying to get some of the rust off right before the event. Again, this could be just trying to get some of the butterflies out, so that, you know, the first challenges that we're facing aren't real. So that would be the kind of the first category. The second category I would call kind of a deep dive mock storm. So this would be something that I would do probably in early summer. Maybe even midsummer would still be fine. A deep dive storm, what we're trying to accomplish there is we're really looking at this from a very granular level, looking at everything that we do and opening challenges, you know, really putting it under a microscope and seeing if we do need to make, you know, like widespread changes to things that we do, because we've got plenty of time still ahead, you know, to talk through those and to make those changes. A deep dive, you know, could be, you know, half of a day that you're spending, again, with your operations team. And really, you're at that point, I would invite anybody that is, you know, normally associated with your snow team. So that could include operators, that could include, you know, foremen, field supervisors, whatever. But, you know, you definitely want your office staff in there as well. And then kind of the third, and this is going to be sort of similar to what, you know, we'll be doing at the operations forum in September. It is kind of a, you know, middle ground type of scenario, not, you know, not too light, but not obviously not super heavy. So this is going to be, you know, a full storm lead up. So what we do is we go 7 days out, and then every couple of, you know, days that pass, we unleash a new forecast, a forecast update on how the storm is moving along. Accompanied with that is changes in the operations scenarios, kind of throwing wrenches right into the planning phase. Something I like to do a lot really is I like to, you know, I call it killing off different members of your team. You know, if you're a senior operations manager, you're a director of operations, you're the person that the decisions rest with, chances are you don't need this training the same way as some other people on your team will. And unless you're new to it or you're really bad at your job, you know, you probably don't need this level of training. But so I want to kill you off and remove you from the training. That way, some more junior employees, some more less experienced people can start trying to make decisions and critically think for themselves. This training really does no one any good if, you know, the director of operations is just answering everything and making the decisions and every, you know, because that's not really getting anyone else on the team to really learn anything. And then with that is some kind of succession planning, right? Another military component. So in the Army, it was, you know, you needed to know your job, the next rank up, the next rank up from that, and then one rank below you too. And, you know, that's because you never know what can happen in a battlefield. You know, I mean, everything changes minute to minute. And so all of a sudden, you know, you might be having to do that job two ranks ahead of you. And I know that, you know, snow is not like that. You know, we don't have people, you know, falling off like that. But, you know, I mean, we can have people get sick. We can have people that got in a car wreck. We can have people that quit. We can have people, you know, it never happens at a good time. So if we're able to kind of incorporate some of this in this mock storm, then at that point, you know, you have people that, all right, now all of a sudden, you know, this kind of junior level person has a better understanding, not only of their job, but, you know, maybe a couple pegs above them of what they're responsible for, what they're thinking, like how they think. We did a operations event last month in Milwaukee. And, you know, one of the questions that I asked was, you know, who is your number two? You know, if something were to happen to you, where does that responsibility fall? And most people were able to kind of, you know, think who that person would be. But the second question to that is, does that person know that? You know, is that person getting the types of information that they need? Are they kept in the loop the same as you are to be able to step right in? And in the case of something were to happen to you, or again, you were able, you took another job, you hit the lottery, you know, like whatever. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen. So, but that's another kind of component and another benefit of running through this scenario based training. So to kind of recap, we've got, you know, three different varieties of storms. That last one I mentioned, you know, that one's going to be more of a 2-hour mark. But, you know, between the rehearsal, the kind of in the middle, and then the deep dive, we're looking at somewhere between 1 and 4 hours. And then really, as far as, you know, who should be invited on your team, as many people as you want, and at a minimum, if they have a hand in snow, they should be there. And sometimes you get people that are, I don't know how to say this, but they're higher ranking in the company, and maybe they think that training doesn't apply to them anymore. But if they have a hand in snow operations, they need to be there.
Let me hop in there real quick, Levi.
Sure.
I love what you were talking about developing people and succession planning and that type of thing. I think that's so important, especially when we're dealing with younger people or, you know, managers who really haven't been put in that position where they have to make the decisions. You know, let's let them make decisions under our guidance, you know, force them to make the call. And that's what this training does. One of the things I'm always preaching is, you know, just as a rule, if you're in management, whenever someone calls to get the answer from you, don't give them the answer. Ask them what they think they would do. And sometimes they're stumped. They're like, I don't know. I just figured you'd tell me what to do. You're the boss. I'm like, No, why don't you call me back in 5 minutes with a recommendation? And I'll tell you if I agree with you or not. I want to coach that person up. If I just give them the answer, they're not using their brain. That's just the easy button, right? Call the boss, get the answer. So in this mock storm training, it's more like, okay, you know, we have 10 trucks. One truck just went down. You're the manager. What do you do? Well, what are my options? Do I have another truck? Am I pulling a sub into the program? Am I taking care of it myself? Am I waking up somebody who's home sleeping? Like, what am I doing here? Okay. And the answer isn't, I'm going to call my boss and ask them what I should do. The answer is, I got to figure it out because I'm running the show. And if my team can make the decisions that I would make consistently because I've done mock training or I've done this type of you tell me what you think type training, I have confidence in my team that they're going to think like me because I've put them in that situation over and over and over again. I feel pretty good now. I can take a day off. I can go on vacation. I can trust my team. And you know what? I think that's a really good philosophy. You know, sometimes in business, there's no right or wrong answer. There's no best alternative. You just have to make a decision and go with it. And sometimes, you know, looking back, you go, oh, geez, I wouldn't have made that decision now, but I didn't have all the information at the time. I only had partial information. I had to make the best decision. So it's really easy to be the Monday morning quarterback and second guess decisions when in the moment you have to make a decision. Am I pulling the trigger? Am I starting the operation? Because as soon as I hit that go button, money starts being spent. Payroll, fuel. As soon as you hit that button, that go button, that's a major, major, major decision. That's an easy decision to second guess. But it's really, really good if you do some mock training and you do some scenarios and you have confidence that your people are going to make good decisions. So, Levi, can you kind of walk us through what one of these, whether it's a one, two, or three, the deep dive, the dress rehearsal, or the middle ground, kind of what does it look like? Can you walk us through it?
Yeah, so I've got a couple of slides that I could share that, you know, just kind of put a visual aspect to this. Again, it's not going to be anything full for the full look. You got to come to the operations forum in September. But let me
share. Yeah, go for it. You should be able to share your screen. So
yeah, give me 1 second. Let me know when you can see it. Can you see it, Phil?
I see it. But for some reason, I don't know if it's just my computer. It's inverted. It's mirror image. But that just might be me.
Is anybody else seeing it that's inverted?
Jeff Allison, are you good? Is it? Okay. All right. Cool. It's just me.
It's just your broken computer, Phil. All right, guys. So this is, again, this is a combination of, you know, weather and operation scenarios. So again, 7 days out is where I like to start this. I'm sure, you know, everyone would kind of agree that, you know, any more than 7 days out, it's probably not worth talking about yet. And even at 7 days out, there's still a lot to be determined with how this storm could shake out. So what I'm showing you right now is it's a real storm that happened in the Indianapolis market, I think, 2 years ago now, maybe even three. And so we kind of adjusted the dates. So if you notice, you know, 7 days from the 26th is going to be, you know, a New Year's storm. So I did this to be able to, you know, really kind of throw in that component of it where, you know, we might have people calling off on New Year's, people that, you know, say they didn't know I had to work on New Year's. You know, and there's a lot of things that I can use being around the holidays to kind of mess with the operational planning as we move through this. But starting with the weather, you know, we're looking at just a couple of sample runs of how this storm is supposed to move across the area. And, you know, we're looking at this, and obviously, I mean, the Canadian model is suggesting that, you know, Indianapolis is going to be on the northwest side of this low pressure system, you know, right in the sweet spot for heavy accumulating snow. Meanwhile, our American model is showing that we're actually going to be on the southeast side of this low and maybe stay in some warmer air. But both models are suggesting a strong storm is likely throughout the area. And again, 7 days out, there's still a lot to be decided on how that's going to go. So what I would do is, you know, I would, you know, give this information to my team. And this would be one of the first things that they see to kind of figure out. And again, this is a snapshot. So I'm also going to include kind of an accumulation map, you know, like what the early thoughts are for what accumulation could be. And then I'm also going to incorporate my first kind of, you know, operational controls is what I call them, you know, kind of giving them some basic information of where we're at. And I've got a sample of that I'll show you too. For the storm, for our purposes, I also include just a very, very generic organizational chart, just because, again, when we're doing this in the September event, you know, we've got a lot of people from a lot of different companies, and not everyone is going to be organized and structured the same way. So instead of, you know, trying to accommodate to, you know, maybe 50 different companies, you know, I'm just going to have this as a starting point. So again, we've got a, you know, senior operations manager, and I'm for sure killing this guy off at some point. You know, he's not going to be alive.
Before you start killing people off, I just want to have a quick comment here.
Sure. Sure.
Don't kill me off, by the way. or you're going to have to run this webinar on your own, but all I think it's really important to have a snow org chart. And I'm surprised at how many companies don't. They have a summer org chart, but for whatever reason, they've just never created a snow org chart. And so kind of like, you know, the blank show, nobody knows who reports to who and no one knows what's going on. Part of that is just because we don't have tools in place. One of those tools is a snow org chart. Really important to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's something that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, there's a lot of companies out there, you're right, that they just haven't put, you know, pen to paper to build this out. They've got it in their head, but it's just not for everybody to see. But yeah, so we've got this. And again, just to kind of, very generic. I mean, we got kind of a mix of, you know, some self-performing stuff going on. We also have a subcontracted division of this company, and then we've got, you know, a few field people here as well. So the operation scenario, so again, this is our, you know, 7 day out scenario. So this is just very, very basic information. No real wrenches are thrown in at this point. All operations staff, they're healthy and they're not expected to miss work for the next 7 days. So all equipment has been tested and is functioning properly. All accounts serviced by the sub-suppliers are sourced. So, you know, we're giving them a full deck to work with, where we're not putting them behind the eight ball and 7 days out. Now, you know, when I was running these for my teams, you know, again, the first time we ever did, I did give them a pretty full deck of cards, but as they started to do this and kind of get the hang of, you know, what the ask was, what the expectations were, you know, then I would really kind of, you know, put the heat on them from the very beginning. And that's something else that, you know, can be considered with this as well, is that, you know, there are three different types of storms, but, you know, for whoever is creating this storm, you can go wild with, you know, how difficult you want to make this or how easy you want to make this. Literally, you know, there were points where every single time that they would come to me with their solution, I'd be like, cool, good job. And 5 minutes later, I send them an update of, you know, what's going to happen next. And I've, you know, destroyed all their work. Because again, you know, I want them to continue, you know, digging deep to come up with these strategies and these solutions. So the harder you make it, just like in anything, you know, you might frustrate some people, you might, you know, break their will at times, but the end result is going to prove to be pretty good, because it's going to be a tough battle tested team, moving forward if they continue to go through this stuff. And then we got some extra information down here. So, you know, two operations staff members are dating. We got three sub suppliers that are first year partners. And then one account, which is comprised of 15 sites, had some issues during the previous event. Again, you know, all kind of, you know, foreshadowing what I might do with this, you know, leading or going down the road as we get closer to the actual storm. But again, just to give you some ideas of, you know, what you can kind of create, to, again, you know, kind of mess with your team's response and really get them to overcome some obstacles. So now we look at something that's, you know, 5 days out, and here I'm showing, you know, our accumulations. So again, you know, this map would also be included in the 7 day, just as, you know, that, that forecast or the radar snapshot would be included with this too. Now I do have to give a shout out to WeatherWorks. You know, they are, huge in helping me out with all this information and all these screenshots and just all this stuff that, that we get. So with this, you know, we're looking, you know, both models are starting to kind of line up a little bit. The American is still heavier, but if you remember, the American 7 days out, you know, suggested that Indianapolis would be on the warm side of this low and they probably wouldn't get much snow at all. Whereas now I would argue that, the American model has, you know, Indianapolis pretty much in the bullseye, with it being on the northwest side of this low. And then the Canadian model, actually has, again, that low tracking now, you know, more probably just east of Cincinnati down here, where the heaviest snow looks to set up, to the southeast side of Indianapolis and the southeast side of Indiana. But again, you know, we're looking at this and, something else with this, you know, your teams are looking at this weather information. They're trying to interpret it. You know, they're trying to get a feel for what's going to happen. And because that's something else, if you've never done snow before, you know, how often are you really looking at the weather and paying attention to the extent we have to? And, you know, this is something that, you know, looking at this, you know, looking at this weather and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what kind of updates are we going to send to our clients, to our sub suppliers as we go through this too. You know, I'm a proponent of, I want to start sending my customer updates around, you know, 4 to 5 days out, because I want them to hear it from me before they hear it anywhere else. I think that's really important. I don't want them coming to me saying, hey, do you know it's going to snow? If they're doing that, then I'm failing as their snow contractor. I think that, you know, 4 or 5 days out is a good starting point. Now, granted, you know, we don't have to be perfect with what we're telling them, because after all, you know, they're not paying us to be their meteorologists. But, you know, something simple like, you know, hey, just wanted you to know we're tracking a winter threat, that should be coming in the next 4 to 5 days. There's still a lot to be determined with this forecast. So, you know, we don't know any specifics just yet. But we do know that there's a storm system coming, cold air is in place. And, you know, our in-house forecasting teams are watching this and our operations teams are getting ready. And then, you know, we'll continue to update as more information comes along. Something like that, you know, short, simple, to the point, can really do wonders for relationships with your client. And then let me see. That's the same one. So essentially, you know, this is kind of, you know, what we're looking at. And again, you know, things are going to continue to change as we get closer to the actual event starting. We're going to continue to to throw wrenches and create new problems with operations. I believe in this scenario, you know, the two people dating call off work at the last minute because they didn't know they had to work on New Year's. And then this storm itself continues to twist and change just like it did in real life up to the last minute. So again, it gives people many different things to look at and to consider. And, you know, it's just a matter of having this conversation. And when we're doing it with our own in-house teams, these conversations can be really powerful and we can get a lot accomplished well ahead of, you know, flakes ever falling.
Yeah, let me hop in real quick. So you might be saying 5 days out, 7 days out, you know, great. I have this weather information. I may or may not trust it being that far out. But, you know, you might be saying, well, what decisions can you make 7 days out? But it's really interesting when we do this training to see, or if you actually do this training in your company, it's interesting to see what information comes out of these conversations. Because there is some planning and some thinking, some analysis that can happen, even if we are 7 days out. And so it's really helpful to see what, you know, who is bringing ideas forward and who isn't, and what those ideas are. Like, you know, oh, this looks like it could be a big storm. We should think about this, and we should go check that, and we should call this, and we should double, you know, like it. You really start to populate a list that's pretty insightful in terms of what's on the list and who's bringing it forward and who isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's 7 days out, you know, I'm doing things like making sure that everybody on my team knows this threat is coming and knows that one way or the other, we're probably going to be working on New Year's Eve. You know, I that's something that we should be addressing during the preseason anyway, that I see that companies out there don't always do. You know, we live and breathe snow, so we know it's not even a thing working on the holidays, you know. But if you bring someone in that's you know, maybe they came from a call center or a factory or whatever, you know, and but that the attitude was right and you thought the fit for the team was right, you brought them on, you know, working Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's during a storm might be pretty new to them. And if they're not told in the preseason, really, you know, hey, this is the expectation, you know, you might have some issues as you get later into the season. And but again, in this case, I mean, I never think it's a bad thing to remind people of important information. And, you know, that is something that I'd be doing 7 days out. And then, you know, as we continue along the march too, you know, I'm going to be reaching out to my my subcontractors to make sure they're ready. Now, granted, you know, they're their own company, so they should be ready. They should be doing their own things like this too. But again, you know, they're still my responsibility, and I need to make those calls. I'm also going to make calls to make sure that, you know, wherever I get my equipment at, or, you know, any shops I use, any, you know, third party type of suppliers, that, you know, they're ready and willing to be able to help me out for this event. I don't want to know that, you know, they had to close or they're on vacation or, you know, something crazy once snow's already fallen. You know, I want to make sure that all this is sorted out way ahead of time. And then, you know, something else too that, you know, at Case, you know, we dealt a lot with subcontractors. And, you know, one of the issues we'd run into a lot is where we'd have either a failure or, you know, again, just someone that maybe they had equipment breakdown or something. Now at Case, if a sub had equipment breakdown and they didn't really have any kind of a backup plan for that. Now it was on us to figure out that solution. And, you know, speaking from experience, not always the most cost-effective thing when you're letting someone else like that make these decisions for you. And so I've always, you know, try to preach that, you know, find some other companies in your area. You guys are competition, but, you know, friendly competitors that you can kind of rely on and maybe, you know, borrow a piece of equipment or, you know, see if they're able to take care of something for you. And it'd be at a lower, much lower price probably than what a, you know, national aggregator would charge you. Because again, that's a terrible road to go down, but it comes back to the pre-season and pre-event planning to know this well ahead of time.
All right. So move us closer to the storm. What happens?
Yeah. So, you know, 3 days out, at this point, you know, we are, we got enough weather information, enough knowledge now that we can really start to make those determinations between, all right, is this going to be a, you know, a salting event? Is this going to be a plow? Is it going to be a heavy plow? And with that, we're also going to kind of make, decisions, you know, based on that information. If I'm looking at a 12-inch storm in Indianapolis, that's a pretty sizable event for us, especially over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. We've, you know, not really seen snow like this very often. And, you know, I'm probably going to start thinking in terms of, you know, really looking at some backups and some contingencies in place in case my equipment does fail. Or in case I do have some labor issues because my guys aren't used to, you know, having to fight a storm like this. So, you know, having kind of a secondary resource to tap into for labor is something to consider too. And then at this point, I'm probably going to start having conversations with at least my, you know, operations leadership of, again, honestly, kind of a dress rehearsal mock storm to start giving them some scenarios and some things to think about and to make sure that, you know, that they're thinking that you know, the lights are on and that they're ready to go. Again, I don't want someone to just, you know, I don't know, show up and assume that everything is going to be going the right way, and then, you know, it ends up going the wrong way. I think with especially the first storm of the year, you know, customers judge us heavily on that first storm. And if we have a failure, if we have issues, the spotlight's on us for a long time. It takes a long, long time. I would argue, you know, probably 5 events or more, to be successful events, you know, to kind of get rid of that, you know, bad taste that was in their mouth from that first event. And then you look at a place like Indianapolis, where especially over the last handful of years, you know, we've maybe had 2 or 3 plowable events a year. And we've had, you know, maybe 10 de-icing events, maybe. So, you know, not all that many events to really, you know, make your mark and make a good impression, especially if you started off with some sort of failure. So, you know, wanting to make sure that, you know, my team knows that our goal every storm we go out is to win. You know, I'm a big football fan. And, you know, one of the mantras for pretty much every team out there is 1-0, right? You always think about, you know, the game ahead of you. You don't really get too far. You're focused on the task at hand, and you know, you want to go 1-0. You want to win that game. And I use that, you know, kind of mindset with my teams too. You know that, hey, you know, we need to win this event. And you know, what's that look like? Well, you know, it looks like, you know, making sure that, you know, we're out there in advance, you know, that we're pre-treating if the contract calls for that, that we're making sure that, you know, everybody is where they need to be and ready to go as soon as it starts snowing, making sure that, you know, we're servicing sites to completion, you know, not doing a, you know, kind of half-assed job. And because it's a heavy event and we're going to start, you know, pulling out the excuses. No, we're going to take care of our job and get it done the right way. We're also going to continue to make sure that we're communicating with the client throughout the storm. That's huge. Especially if, you know, maybe you don't have service application technology that a lot of people have nowadays. You know, if you don't have that to be able to give the customer a window into what you're doing, then you should be texting or emailing or calling them to kind of give them some updates on your progress. And especially if maybe something did happen where you fell behind, you know, customer needs to know that. If they find out you're behind before you tell them, you know, it's going to be a much tougher conversation to have than if you were just, you know, transparent and proactive with your communication from the beginning. So I think that those are, you know, some really important things to consider as we get closer and closer and closer to the actual, you know, start of the storm here.
Yeah, we're getting close to an hour, so I want to wrap things up here in the next few minutes. If anyone has questions or comments, just, you know, unmute yourself and hop in there or hop in the chat. I have a couple things I want to just share here. You know, if I was running a snow contracting business right now, what I would do with this information is I would do a mock storm for each of my primary kind of snow plans. So I would have a designed snow plan for a normal full push, full salt, full sidewalks, you know, your normal fluffy, you know, 3-inch full push. Okay. I know exactly what that looks like in my operation. I know what trucks are going out. I know who's driving them. I know how many bags of material they need. Everything is dialed in. Okay. I have another plan for a very light dusting. I'm not plowing snow, but sidewalks need to get treated, full de-icing. Okay, if we're pre-treating, we do pre-treats. That's a different scenario. I have another scenario, another plan for a heavy push, heavy, heavy, heavy storm. So whether that's 12 inches or 24 inches or whatever, that's a whole different animal, right? I'm bringing in, you know, loader operators that I wouldn't normally maybe bring in for a normal push, depending on my situation. Okay, so I have these different plans, right? Maybe I have three. I just outlined three. Maybe I have four. Maybe I have five. Whatever it is, I want to do a full mock storm for each of those. And when I bring people in for this training, they won't know what it's going to be. And so that's kind of what Levi does, you know, when we do this full mock storm. 7 days out, you think you're going to get clobbered, and then it's a switch and bait, and it's something else. At the end of the day, I want to run my team through each of my snow plans. Not only that, if I can do it in my software program, I want to use all the apps. I want to use all the software. I want to use all the technology, and I want to build a storm out. Okay. If you can do this, if your software application allows you to do a demo, if you can go in sandbox mode and build a storm out, that's a wonderful thing, because now you're involving your office in this as well. And you're seeing if your invoicing is accurate and you're identifying all the gaps in your technology. So to me, this is like a beautiful process to make sure you're identifying any flaws in your system. And you can do this in August. You can do it in September. The worst time to find out you have a problem is during a storm. So I love this process. I would fully adopt this if I was running a snow business right now. And so those are my parting words. Levi, take us home. I don't see anything in the chat right now, so everyone's just drinking it in, which is cool. Oh, here we go. We have a question. Can you see that, Levi?
Yeah, I'm reading it right now. Give me 1 second. All right, Michael. So first storm preparedness. I'm a huge proponent of, in order to win the winter season, you have to win the preseason. And like, that's where all this comes from. If you have a really strong preseason, then a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, site specifics and, customer complaints after that first storm, a lot of that can be, completely erased from having preseason site visits and knowing, who we need to meet with, have sort of a checklist of things to go over with, again, the obvious ones, where do I push the snow? What are the highest priority areas of this site? If there is an 18-inch storm where it's, 2 inches an hour and you guys are open for some reason, what are the areas that I have to keep clear? And are there any access challenges? Do you have any gates under lock and key or code that I might need, to get into to be able to clear those areas? I can't tell you how many times that's happened where, guys go out and they get a site, 80% clear, but something is under lock and key and they didn't know it or whatever. That's on you to investigate and figure out during the preseason. And really also something else is to get a solid point of contact, their cell phone number at that site. Just because if there is any sort of emergency, any last second thing, who knows? I mean, I've dealt with clients in like the energy sector and stuff where you've got kind of remote sites where they are padlocked up and, those, they can change locks at a moment's notice and not really tell anybody. And so, of course, we're the first ones to figure it out when it snows. Having that contact information, being able to, if I got a challenge at 3 a.m, can I text you and, can you help us out so we can get you taken care of? But really, yeah, I mean, the first storm preparedness, really starts in the preseason and it's having, strong, impactful site visits, make sure that, an operator or a foreman or, someone who is going to be at that site is conducting those visits. Because you don't necessarily want it to be just some random person doing a bunch of visits for you, because if they're not able to effectively, share that communication with everybody else, then, that meeting wasn't really as useful as it could have been.
Yeah, I think it's important to get out on sites during the daytime and see them with the map, with the plow maps, and just really think it through and get a good read on it. We also always brought in like everybody. The first time we got a dusting, we brought everybody in, plow drivers and everybody, because at least we had a billable event. We could cover some of the cost, versus send everybody out, on a beautiful sunny day when you're supposed to be doing something else. You're not only spending money, but you're losing production.
Sure.
But if you have a dusting, at least you have some billable, revenue to come in to cover some of that. So just, we would call everybody in. Hey, this is a good time to go really drive your sites, go find all those sidewalks, get the map out there, figure out what questions you have. And it's usually at night. So it's, again, if you can get them out daytime, let them see the site again at night when there's really no pressure. That's a really good move. Great question. Thank you. Levi, any parting words? We're really at our close here. I want to thank you for sharing all this information. I look forward to seeing you in person next month.
Yeah, no, I appreciate everybody coming out. And for those who couldn't join us live, I hope you enjoy the recording. You know, please try to join us in September. That's going to be a pretty awesome event. I believe the last event of the year for the Snow Fighters Institute.
Right.
And then also just a quick self-promotion. JetFacilityConsultants.com is my website. Levi@JetFacilityConsultants.com is my email address. If anyone has any more questions about this in particular or the other services we offer, please shoot me a line. I'd be glad to talk to you more about it.
You also have a podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. The White Gold podcast. So we did just wrapped up our season on that, I think a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago. And just for any confusion. So I had a podcast called The Industry, did that for, I think, about 28 episodes a year ago. And then kind of rebranded some things and changed it over to the White Gold podcast. And again, we did a 12 episode season from the beginning of spring through, I think, June. And then at some point, as we get closer to the winter season, we'll probably be starting season 2 of the White Gold podcast again.
Yeah, awesome. So we're going to take this recording, send it out to everyone who registered. We'll also put this up on Snow Fighters Institute podcast. So it'll go out to our community. And I just want to say thank you all for attending and everyone who registered, who's watching the recording. Hope you have a wonderful snow season and hope to see you in September at Ops Management. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, guys.